Next on The Balanced Word, applying God's wisdom to help us lead better.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Hi there, friend. Great to have you along today as we go deeper into the Proverbs in search of God's wisdom that'll help us do life better and smarter. That's why we call our present series Smarter Living. Today on The Balanced Word, Pastor Dave Rolfe has a look at government and leadership and what the Proverbs have to say about it. Sure, it may help you when you head off to vote later on this year, but it can also help us lead too. Whether we're a parent, a boss, or a leader in the church, there's something here for us. Here's Pastor Dave with part one of Government and Leadership.
As we look through once again the instructions that Solomon gives us in the book of Proverbs about how to live life smarter, we certainly need to learn how we can do life better, because as we do life better, it gives us a better life. It helps us to represent God more accurately, and it really increases the quality of the lives of all the people around us as well. So each week this year, we look at some theme in Proverbs and see what Solomon has said about it. Well, as you know, the big election here in the U.S., and maybe you've noticed that I just don't talk about politics at all. I don't, you know, we have people, I want people to be free to vote however they want. I'm not going to tell people how to vote. We don't have voters' guides and that kind of stuff. But my message today is kind of going to be my voter's guide, coming from the book of Proverbs to see what does Solomon tell us about leadership, about political leadership, about government and how it ought to run. And, you know, you're probably going to come away feeling like, I still don't know who to vote for. And that's fine. Yeah, I don't care who you vote for. But it's important for us as people who have the privilege of voting, as Jerry has said, people have died so that you can vote. It's important for us to see what God's perspective on all of this is, not only so that we can be good citizens, not only so that we can be involved in electing a government that we feel is going to do what God wants government to do, but even more than that, the same principles that govern how a country should be led are the same principles that govern the way we should lead in whatever area of responsibility we have. When I look at these scriptures that we're going to look at today, it teaches me how better to be a dad, how better to be a boss, how better to be anyone, a friend, anyone who's in a position of influence and leadership can learn a lot from what Solomon says as he primarily talks about the king, the government, and things like that. The first verse we're going to look at gives us an idea of what priority number one is. Whenever we're talking about government, whenever we're talking about leadership, here's what matters most. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 34. This is such an important verse for us to know and to remember. As he addresses nations and people, groups of people. Verse 34, Proverbs chapter 14. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach or disgrace to any people. Righteousness and sin. We throw these terms around a lot. Quite often, people look at that and go, well, wait, whose standard of righteousness are we talking about? Everyone, the Bible says there's none righteous, no, not one. So no one has the corner on righteousness. But at least to understand, here's what's most important to God. Righteousness means doing life right. It means living your life in such a way that it produces the kind of life that you can have. God wants us to reach our potential, and that's why he tells us how to live. He doesn't make rules so that he can show us that, well, you broke that rule, you broke that rule, you're busted, you're in trouble. He wants to give us a great life. And so the things that he says are righteous are the kinds of things that are going to produce within us a great life. Sin, as the Bible talks about it, the Hebrew word for sin that's used here is a word that just means to miss. You missed, you whiffed, you struck out. The New Testament, the Greek word for sin, is a similar word. In that case, it means that you missed your destiny, We sometimes say missing the mark. What sin is settling for something less than what you could be. It's missing out on everything that life offers and everything that it could be if we would listen to God and do things His way. And so, you know, Solomon is making this clear, and he does in so many passages. It's like, look, the bottom line, priority number one is do things right. Don't miss everything that God could have for you by, as Paul calls it, falling short of the glory of God, missing out on the ultimate destiny that God has for you. So, you know, as a people, as a nation, as any group of people, it's as much as I have a burden for this for our nation because I'm an American, I have a burden for this as a church. I have a burden for this as my family, as my circle of friends, as my staff and the people that work here and everything. It's like, what I want more than anything is let's do this right. And let's do this right in a way that ultimately produces the kind of life that we can have. Let's reach our potential and, if possible, exceed what we think is our potential by having the life that Jesus calls a more abundant life. And so that we have to put across. Everything else that we read is that this is what matters to God. Now, one more verse along these lines that applies specifically to leaders and not just to a people. Turn back to Proverbs 16 and verses 12 and 13. He says, specifically about kings, rulers, it's an abomination for kings to commit wickedness, for a throne is established by righteousness. See, the same idea, you know, applied specifically to a leader. And so then in verse 13, righteous lips are the delight of kings, and they love him who speaks what is right. That word there that says, where it says speaks what is right, the word there means straight or true. It's used in that respect a lot. So he says, when you're looking for a leader, you want to find somebody who is doing it right, who's living life right, and that's tough. But then you also want someone who will talk straight, who's just going to say it. Now, again, when you're talking about political leaders, it's really hard to find somebody who's either doing it right or shooting straight with you. If somebody just tells us the truth, we're ready to kill them. You know, and let's just say this right off the top. Anyone who runs for president is probably certifiable. If they didn't have the position that they had, they'd probably be locked up somewhere. Because you have to be nuts to even want to run for that. Because as soon as you say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, or, you know, they find out that you shoplifted when you were 12, it's like, oh, okay, you're getting it. But let's just remember, for God, he goes, look, a leader needs to begin and have as this most fundamental thing, I want to do the right thing, and I will tell you the truth. I will shoot straight with you. Whether or not that will get you elected, I don't know. But we don't really choose between those kinds of people most of the time anyway. So it's, you know, but here's what Solomon says. Just remember this, righteousness and honesty. That's where it needs to begin for sure. But there are also, in Proverbs, some keys to longevity. It's one thing to get into a position of leadership. It's another thing to stay there. The world is full of success stories that then fail. Businesses that are started and they're booming and then all of a sudden, boom, they fall apart. There are certainly people who, when they become a leader, they're awesome. But over time, it seems like power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, as Lord Acton said. So Solomon talks about what will make you last as a leader. And turn over to Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 28. He says, mercy and truth preserve the king, and by loving kindness he upholds his throne. Mercy and loving kindness are kind of the same thing. It's just like, be nice. That's what, you know, that's what he's basically saying. But mercy and truth, being nice, but also telling the truth. Everyone agrees that mercy is a good thing, and everyone agrees that truth is a good thing. But bringing those two qualities together and having them be the way you live your life, man, that's hard. To be able to be gracious and at the same time be honest. There are a whole lot of people who are really merciful, but they lie to you because they don't want to offend you. And there are a lot of people who will shoot straight, but they don't really care about you. And so he's saying, if a leader will allow these two things, you know, this, you know, caring about what's right, showing mercy, and speaking the truth, that's a powerful combination, and it will preserve a leader. It will give someone great longevity in what they do in when they're in a position of influence and power. But over in Proverbs 28, another promise that involves the longevity of a leader. Proverbs 28 and verse 16, Solomon says, a ruler who lacks understanding or who doesn't get it is a great oppressor. They just walk all over people. But he who hates covetousness will prolong his days. Most people who want to be leaders want to be there because of what they have to gain. If you can find someone who is in a position of influence and yet they're not trying to grab everything for themselves, that's something that will really last, because people will eventually figure it out that, you know, you just want this for you, don't you? Now, again, when we're talking about political candidates, it's hard to find anyone who doesn't want it for themselves on some level, because this is a system that's just so messed up in terms of how it affects your life that, you know, it's hard to sort out the covetousness, but the whole thing is, if you really do care and you don't oppress people, you're not just using people to walk all over them to manipulate the masses, but if instead you become a person who is actually selfless, you become a person who is actually, who really wants to let go of what your own personal gains can be and actually help other people succeed, that would be something that would really last. But there's another thing. If you turn, here in Proverbs 28, still, verse 2, we see another aspect. Proverbs 28:2 says, because of the transgression of a land, or because the people are really messed up, many are its princes. But by a man of understanding and knowledge, right will be prolonged. Bureaucracy is an incredible curse. The bigger the government is, the more people who are being supported by the government, the more the people are missing out on what could be. Now, how you reverse that once it's in place is a whole different problem. But I think for most of us, we can just go, it's ridiculous. The number of laws that we have, the number of ways that we can mess up, the number of people who they're hiring, and almost everybody who's running for office is proposing hiring a bunch more people to do a bunch of other stuff. And here Solomon just goes, the more rulers you have, the more you've missed it. The more your transgressions happen, then the more laws you're going to have to pass and the more people you're going to have to support in order to do what you need to do to just hold things together. And boy, we can certainly see this in our day and age, for sure. But God warned about it from the beginning. The children of Israel used to just, God was their king. And then he would have a ruler, kind of a prophet, kind of a guy like a Moses or somebody like that. And then you had, you know, each tribe, each family had their own leaders over them. And you had a priesthood. And it was pretty simple, bureaucratically. But they decided, they got jealous of all these other countries, and countries were like these podunk villages in the Middle East, and it's like, they have a king, we want a king. And God's like, you don't want a king. Having a king is really not all it's cracked up to be. And God said, but hey, if you want a king, you can have a king, but here's what's going to happen. That king is going to hire a whole bunch of people that you're going to have to support. That king is going to lord it over you. That king is going to take your kids and put them to work, force them to be a part of his, you know, household and his army and everything else. And God's like, you're going to hate life if you insist on a king. Well, fast forward to today. Oh, man. The damage that has been done by bureaucracy is just ridiculous. So we can't stop all of that ourselves, but let's at least understand that the size, the magnitude of the bureaucracy is a part of the fruit of us not doing life right, of us not allowing God to do what, you know, sometimes that he'd be willing to do if we would just let things mellow out a little bit and we didn't feel like we have to fix everything and do everything. Bureaucracy's a curse, Solomon would say. Now, let's turn over now to Proverbs chapter 29, a couple pages over in verse 2. Because here he shows us that you can look at the results of the people and you can know what your leadership is really like. Proverbs 29 and verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, when you have authorities that are doing things right, the people rejoice. But when a wicked person rules, the people groan. On the surface, it's like you look at the attitude of the people and you will know the quality of the leadership. Now, this is true in a nation. It's true in a world. It's true in a family. It's true in a company. It's true on any level of where people are. Look at the heart and the attitude of those who are there, and it speaks something about the leadership. Now, I have to say this. He's talking specifically to a people. When we think of the word people, we tend to think of people as a whole, anyone who is human. But when the Bible uses the word people, it's talking about a people group. It's talking about a group of people who bind together in their own self-interest to try to enhance their lives as a national identity or as a village identity or whatever. We've been so brainwashed concerning globalism that people today, kids who are growing up today, are kind of being told that, you know, it's not that you're an American. It's that you're a citizen of the world. We are all the same. We're all a part of this. Now, not to mention a whole lot of other problems that come from globalism, and I understand certainly that there are some aspects of getting along with the rest of the world that's a good thing, but what's happening is people are losing their sense of national pride. People are, you know, we're talking ultimately about nationalism like it's a bad thing and globalism as if it's a good thing. But there is a certain kind of celebration that you do with other people where you take pride in who you are collectively, not personal pride, not arrogance, but the idea of, well, let me explain it this way. The Chicago Cubs won the World Series after over 100 years of terrible baseball. They won. Now, I'm sure this room has a whole lot of people who come from Chicago. But look, you come from Chicago. Obviously, there's nothing about Chicago that was worth actually living there for the rest of your life. But then this opportunity comes where it's like, we have been suffering as Cubs fans forever. I mean, my wife was celebrating with Cubs fans, and she didn't care about the Cubs until about the third inning of Game 7. And then she's like, these are my people. Because there's something. And I was kind of torn because, I like Back to the Future. It'd be cool if the Cubs won. But at the same time, it's like, oh, that's not my team. I'm happy for them. But frankly, if Cleveland had won, that's an even more pathetic city to live in. So I would have been happy for them too, you know. But here's why that feels interesting, is because we're all looking for a way to bind together as a people. And when you read the Bible, you understand. That's why when God called one family and he goes, now you're going to be my people. It's you against the world. It's you against everyone. Our psyches are designed to be able to. It's why we like team sports and things like that, because it's like, hey, yeah, we are together. We are a team. Now, it might be a beautiful image of it's just let the whole world is together. But the problem is about with globalism is there are a whole bunch of people in other countries, especially those in collectivist cultures, that they are not interested in being we are the world. They're like their people. And it doesn't matter who they are and what they do. It's always going to be about us because they have that identity. The problem, frankly, for us as Americans is we've lost whatever holds us together as Americans. And by Americans, I mean everyone who chooses to live here. I don't care how they got here or anything else. It's like, no, if you want to be an American, come here and be a part of who we are. You don't just Continue to just be whoever you are. Live in America and hate America. Take all the benefits of being here. No, we need to be a people, and that's important. Almost every one of us came from somewhere else, somewhere down the road, but we came here to join up with what America is and what it means. And I think that throughout the scriptures, you see this, but we've seen it in life too. Remember 9/11, when all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, I have never seen so much national unity, for a while. And then it kind of fritters away under other influences. But man, when you're attacked, it's like, hey, this is us. There were other countries who have, who have weak national identities, who were saying things like, on 9/11, we are all Americans. Well, that's kind of nice. That's what it means. But we're supposed to be a team. You let your kids play soccer, and maybe they don't keep score, but your kid knows the score because they like to celebrate and be a part of something that's actually successful. World War II, when the U.S. was bombed at Pearl Harbor. And again, historical revisionism or whatever, I know, maybe it was a plot, maybe it's this or that, and the Trilateral Commission might have done the whole thing, I don't know. But what happened to America is all of a sudden, young people were going, I'm going to join, I'm going to sign up. Kids were lying about their age, 15-year-olds with fake ID, wanting to sign up and go fight for the country. People were willing, nobody complained about rationing, various commodities. It's like, hey, I'll give whatever I can because it's us. We're a people. We are designed that way. It's why, remember, when the last time we had globalism, it's called the Tower of Babel. When everybody just, they're singing, we are the world, and imagine, and it's like, you got Michael Jackson and John Lennon, and they're like, yeah, let's get together. But what God did was step in, and he changed their languages so that he could send them out, and that they would live with their own personal identities, according to Genesis. Well, there are times when, as we look at leadership, we need to feel good about who we are. We don't need a sense of national shame. We can be honest and take responsibility for some of the things that we've been responsible for as a people and go, yeah, that's wrong. We shouldn't do that anymore. But at the same time, it's so important that as a people, we find reasons to rejoice. And when we're not rejoicing together as a people, when instead we're groaning as a people, ultimately the buck stops at the leadership that we've selected. The way that works, for what that's worth.
We're receiving God's wisdom from the Proverbs right here on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Roth. It's part of a series called Smarter Living. And you can request a CD copy by calling 949-362-7475. I should also mention this entire series is available on a USB for a donation of $10 or more. You'll receive all 51 messages in the series that'll lead you to smarter living as you hear and learn to live by God's wisdom from the Proverbs. So call us at 949-362-7475 and ask for the Smarter Living Thumb Drive. Our programs are also available online at thebalancedword.com. Thank you for your support of the Balanced Word Radio Ministry. It allows us to bring Pastor Dave's teachings to stations like this one all across the nation. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. You can hear him teach on a Sunday morning at any one of these three times, 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information or to live stream. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We'll end today's Balanced Word with wonderful hope.
Proverbs 21:1. Gives me hope, because Solomon says the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. Wow. What Solomon is saying is, it doesn't matter who the king is, it doesn't matter how bad they are, it doesn't matter how much they mess up, God is still on the throne. People decided a long time ago that they wanted kings. We continue to try to have kings that are going to help us. And ultimately, it's always been God that we really need. He's the one that knows what's best for us. He's the one that wants to provide for us. And you know what? God is not freaking out about who's going to win our election on Tuesday. He's not at all. He's not like worried. He's not going, oh, this is just, oh, you know, heaven's not buzzing looking at the polls and the news and WikiLeaks and all that. It's like, God just like, doesn't matter to me who wins because I'm going to be at work no matter what.
We'll air the rest of this message on government and leadership Monday on The Balanced Word with Dave Raw, a daily presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo, online at thebalancedword.com. Have a great weekend.
Wake up my soul. Wake up.